You're listening to Let's Talk Macro,
brought to you by Bandhan Mutual Fund.
Hello and welcome to Let's Talk Macro, everybody, the podcast on macroeconomics brought to you by Bandhan Mutual Fund, where we discuss interesting global and domestic macroeconomic topics and events. Now, before each episode, you know, Srijit and I, hi, Ahalya here, everybody, usually have, you know, a minute or two of conversation. And preceding today's recording, Srijit actually brought up how the world is quite volatile. And I think we're going to be discussing that volatility and the dynamic nature of economics in today's day age across geographies, given that, you know, we're at an important time. We've also had the elections in India, so a lot changed there. I have much to say on that. But first, let me welcome Srijit. Hi, Srijit. How are you?
I'm good, Ahalya. How are you?
Good, good to go. And lucky for us, we've got you, the economist in the fixed income fund management team, to talk to us once again. Now, you know, since our last conversation, Srijit, on the series, it's been an eventful month, right? We've had key central bank meetings across geographies, economic data that has moved markets worldwide. Like I said, the union government election results here in India. So today we're going to just take a stock of everything that happened in the past month or so. Srijit, I think I want to start with the U.S. One point of interest in today's conversation is definitely going to be the differences in reactions and responses across geographies. No economy is doing it the same way, really. When it comes to the U.S., you know, we had the U.S. Central Bank, which is the Fed's monetary policy meeting earlier this month, and they kept their policy rate unchanged. So could you give us a sense of the economic context and the rationale behind this policy decision?
Sure. So the Fed has been holding rates steady since September last year, after a historical rate hike cycle. In December, there was a major shift when it started discussing interest rate cuts, and it gave a median projection for 3 cuts this year, that's 2024. This was based on the progress in disinflation and labor market easing the US witnessed in the second half of 2023, and also the assumption of at least similar progress to continue. The markets actually went ahead of the Fed in expecting almost double the number of rate cuts. But unfortunately, we had really strong data in the first quarter of this calendar year, you know, be it employment, inflation, growth, and these were all well above market expectations. After 3 months of upside data surprises in May, the Fed had to acknowledge lack of further progress on disinflation, strong private domestic demand. It was therefore likely for them to take longer to gain confidence that inflation is moving sustainably down to their 2% target. So this meant rate cuts are likely delayed. But in a turn of events, after May, the data releases have not showed the kind of broad strength it did earlier in the year. So to give you an example, retail sales, consumer sentiment, the purchasing manager index components, consumer price index inflation, producer price index inflation have all been, you know, at or below expectation. The payroll data, that is the non-farm payroll addition, the labor market data has also been quite mixed. Non-farm jobs added in May based on the survey of establishments there was very strong. But at the same time, another survey based on households suggested much weaker data and unemployment rate moving up to, you know, 4%. So the labor market is also broadly moving into better balance as labor supply is improving, although some pockets of data, you know, have been strong there. Therefore, for the Fed, the risk of achieving its dual goals on inflation and employment have moved into better balance.
Okay.
And so in this month's meeting, the Fed said, no, disinflation showed modest progress, but it will need to see more good data, you know, more data like what it has been seeing in the last, let's say, month or so. In terms of rates, the median official projection for this year is now down to just 1 cut, but for next year is up from 3 to 4 cuts. So if inflation falls more quickly or labor market unexpectedly weakens, they'll adjust their response, obviously. So in this context, let's not forget the weakness in pockets, particularly in the lower income segments, like the pickup in credit card and auto loan delinquencies, consumer price sensitivity to purchases and so on. So directionally, the expectation is still for progress on disinflation and easing of labor market in the US.
No, it's very interesting. I find myself quite intrigued by the situation in the U.S., you know, Srijit, just given that its reputation has been long known to be, you know, one of the most powerful economies in the world. And the past year or two, we've really been seeing data that contradicts that, right? And glad we can chat it out on the podcast. So finally, some soft data in the U.S. and the Fed at least needs to see more such data prints. I believe that the situation is, however, different in Europe and in other advanced economies. Like I was saying, the response hasn't been uniform world over. And we have spoken about this monetary policy divergence when we spotlighted the UK and Europe economies. So what is the situation there in that part of the world? And do you expect this kind of divergence to continue? I mean, also makes sense given that the contexts are quite different.
Yeah. So take Europe, for instance. The main difference is growth, which has been much weaker, you know, be it manufacturing or credit growth. Most of the data, services inflation is high, but it's still lower than that in the US. Now, this is also because pandemic-related fiscal stimulus was lower in Europe, and I think we have spoken about it before. So underlying inflation has eased and is expected to ease further into next year. Now, this is the primary reason the European Central Bank, the ECB, cut its policy rates by 25 basis points this month for the first time in this cycle. But if you see the ECB's projections, both headline and core inflation, that is headline inflation excluding the volatile components of food and fuel, are expected to stay above its 2% target well into next year. Now, this is because wage growth, although it is moderated, is still elevated and, you know, can fluctuate further. For example, we've seen negotiated wage growth in Germany and in the retail sector being high and still trying to catch up with lost purchasing power. So how wage growth plays out across countries in the euro area and sectors and how much of this gets absorbed by company profits will determine the inflation trajectory ahead. And this will in turn define the ECB's policy decisions. And so the ECB not pre-committing to a particular rate path at this month's meeting, therefore does not come as a surprise.
Right.
Now, divergent fiscal policies pursued by countries within the euro area block is another area of concern for the ECB, you know, which is unlike the case in the US. For example, different countries rolled out different consumer energy price support measures after the Russia-Ukraine war. Now, timely rollback of these are important, for example. They now have a new fiscal framework in place, which provides guiding principles and requires some countries to fiscally consolidate under the excessive deficit procedure that they have. They could also face issues, for example, like the current situation in France, you know, a country with high fiscal deficit and government debt, where snap elections have been called for. And so the government bond spread, the yield spread between France and Germany has widened. Now, the ECB has separate tools like the transmission protection instrument, which is essentially something that provides them flexibility on secondary market purchase of securities to handle any, you know, country-specific market issues. But that is subject to certain criteria. But that allows the ECB to focus on its price stability mandate and counter risk to monetary transmission. But for now, the ECB has cut its policy rate without committing to any particular magnitude or pace of further cuts, like I mentioned. The Bank of England, on the other hand, held its policy rate this month with a 7-2 vote again, although headline inflation fell faster than previously envisaged to its target of 2% in May. This is because services inflation there is still high. I think it's around 5% plus. And headline inflation is expected to increase slightly later in the year. And so more evidence of moderating wage growth and declining inflation persistence was called for there. I think that's broadly the situation in Europe.
I think volatile is probably the word for today's podcast, because like you mentioned, you know, with snap elections being called, I mean, there's so much interaction now between the political scenarios in different geographies and the economics of it all, right? So it's very important, I think, now more than ever to keep an eye on both. So just to summarize there, the ECB cutting rates this month before the Fed and the Bank of England moving closer as well. And I believe we also had central banks in some of the other advanced economies also cutting rates recently. We heard the news of Bank of Canada cutting rates earlier this month. So which other central, major central banks have now cut rates before the Fed even has?
You're right. The Bank of Canada cut its policy rate by 25 basis points earlier this month. Now, growth there in first quarter this year was a bit weaker than expected, and wage growth is moderating gradually. April inflation was, I think, around 2.7%, with price pressures being now a little narrower. Although shelter inflation there is still high. That's one story of one example. Switzerland cut its policy rate twice by, you know, 25 basis points each in March and June. So inflation there was only, I think, 1.4% or so in May and is expected to average around the same level this year. Growth is also expected to remain modest. Another example is Sweden. You know, Sweden has also cut rates by 25 basis points as inflation is approaching target and economic activity is weak. And the central bank there expects two more rate cuts this year if the inflation outlook holds. So globally, we are already witnessing monetary policy divergence from the US Fed. Now, however, it is not a given that this divergence keeps growing, and where it will go from here will depend on the domestic data in the US and obviously in each of the other countries. That is how the labor market and inflation dynamics there evolve. Now, the only notable exception among advanced economy central banks is Japan, which recently exited negative interest rates and yield curve control policies. At its meeting this month, it said it'll reduce its purchase of government bonds also during the next 1 to 2 years, but that the plan will be finalized only at its next meeting after consulting market participants. So given the dovish outcome, again, the Japanese yen has continued to depreciate. So the Bank of Japan stands out, but for the some of the other major central banks, it's a clear case of policy divergence from the US Fed.
No, absolutely. I think once again, a point of intrigue, right, where usually we'd have people following in the footsteps of the Fed. Sometimes I think of because of necessity, but now that's kind of been turned on its head. Yeah. A clear case also of policy divergence for major advanced economy central banks, except like you said, of, you know, the Bank of Japan versus the US Fed. How this progresses from here will, I think, be entirely data dependent. We will, of course, try to break that down for you in the coming podcasts, I'm sure. And that brings us to emerging markets. So let's quickly take the case of China. Anything interesting or major changes there recently that we need to keep a track of? We have spoken about China in our previous podcast as well.
Yeah. The gravity of the slowdown in China's property sector and consumer situation is well understood. Now, over the years, we've seen attempts to deleverage the economy, stringent lockdowns during the pandemic, lackluster economic reopening, weak property prices and sales, and of course, weak consumer sentiment, loans and retail sales. The broad narrative remains the same. CPI inflation, consumer price index inflation, that is, has also remained very benign there, reflecting weak consumer situation. In May, that is last month, some additional policy measures were announced, like, you know, a $40 billion fund for government purchase of unsold housing. But that is believed to be quite small compared to the total stock of unsold property there. There was also a down payment cut for first-time home buyers from 20% to 15%, and minimum mortgage rates were scrapped. However, the one-year and five-year loan prime rate, which serve as the benchmark rates for various loans in China, were held constant this month, so that is left unchanged. So what we've been seeing is basically no big bang policy measures yet to address the economic issues from both the demand and supply sides. And additionally, excess capacity in various manufacturing sectors continues, and that's the broad story in China that sort of continues to be the same.
Okay. Speaking of emerging markets, we've got to touch upon India, where we are recording from. It was a very interesting time. The election results shook up the market. I remember just sort of looking at two screens, right, during the election result announcement day. And that in itself was quite a cinematic moment, I think, for many people. And RBI monetary policy meeting was this month as well. So what are your inferences from these two pretty key events? And also, if you could shine some light on the latest economic context in the country.
Let me talk about the economic context first. We know growth has been quite strong, with real GDP growth in the December and March quarters exceeding most forecasts. One, growth in gross value added, the GVA, was slower than the GDP growth, and that is a little more reflective of the actual growth situation. That's pretty okay. Two, we are still below the level of output we would have achieved had the pandemic not happened. So let's not forget that. So it's still a catch-up in that sense, in terms of growth. On inflation, inflation has been moderating, with core inflation, I think, only around 3.1% in May and averaging just 3% plus in the last 6 months. So that's remained quite low and moderate. Even headline inflation, excluding just the vegetables part, has been only around 3.5% recently. So food inflation, and that too only a few items within that, has been the source of volatility and the main driver of higher inflation readings in India. Now, we had heat waves which impacted output of perishables, slightly lower rabi season wheat procurement, and now we also have a slow start to the monsoon season rainfall. However, the whole June to September rainfall is forecasted to be above normal, as, you know, global weather conditions turn favorable too. If the spatial and temporal distribution of rainfall turns out to be normal, it'll be good for both food inflation and even rural consumption, which needs a boost. The other thing is our current account situation, which is much better now. It turned surplus in the March quarter after 10 quarters. And the full year number, the FY24 deficit, was only 0.7% of GDP. Now, structurally, rising services trade surplus has really helped here. And this is driven by not just IT exports, but consulting and exports from the increasing number of global capability centers being set up in India. The other thing is on fiscal. We saw the central government deficit ending the financial year 2024 at 5.6% of GDP, lower than the estimate in the February budget. So we also saw a higher than expected transfer of RBI surplus of 2.1 trillion rupees in May, providing additional comfort this year. That is in FY25. So the economic backdrop in India is quite robust. And India government bonds are also getting included in the JP Morgan Emerging Market Global Bond Index from this month. So we should see the election results and RBI policy, like you mentioned, in this context of strong economic backdrop. So what we need and look forward to is policy continuity. So that is on fiscal policy, that would be the consolidation glide path to less than 4.5% of GDP by FY2026, which is the target that has been laid out. And continued focus on capital expenditure. The upcoming union budget should help us clarify this. On monetary policy, RBI decided not to change the policy rate and the stance at this month's meeting. Although two external members of the Monetary Policy Committee voted for a 25 basis points cut and a change in stance to neutral from withdrawal of accommodation.
Right.
While the external members argued that real policy rates are high, which entails a growth sacrifice, the other majority believed robust growth provided the room to continue the RBI's focus on disinflation, particularly given food inflation risks on the horizon. The other important part was also that the governor stressed the RBI's policy decision is primarily guided by domestic growth inflation dynamics, and that it is not tied to the US Fed's policy. All said, currently we expect modest rate cuts from around October if food inflation stabilizes, that is. So that's where we are on the economic situation.
Yeah, well, Shrija, just being, I think, for both of us in the country, being able to see things happen in real time, I think we can speak quite openly about the fact that it's not just an expectation soon. I think it's going to start being a demand, right? The rate cuts. and hopefully food inflation does stabilize very, very soon. Thank you so much, Shrija, for joining us as always, breaking down the facts, the data, and giving us a much clearer picture of what's going on. And in today's podcast, quite a tall order because we had to cover all sorts of geographies. So it's been a good conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. It's great to catch up what's been happening in the, the markets and the economies worldwide.
Okay, so I'm going to give you a minute to just relax after that intense breakdown. To end the conversation, everyone, let me quickly run you through today's summarization with three key takeaways. The first being about the US. We have started seeing broader weakness in data. And for rate cuts, the Fed needs to see more good data and further progress on disinflation, although it has dialed down the number of cuts this year. The second would be in Europe. It's a different context given the weaker growth, as Shrijit had mentioned. Underlying inflation has eased, wage growth has moderated, but there are still uncertainties and fiscal concerns in some countries. So the European Central Bank cut rates this month, but has not pre-committed to any magnitude or pace of further cuts. Other advanced economy central banks like Switzerland, Sweden and Canada have also cut rates ahead of the Fed, while the Bank of England doesn't look too far behind. So clearly, monetary policy divergence in the developed world from the US Fed, which is a very intriguing point that has come out through today's podcast. But how this divergence is going to progress from here depends on domestic growth, inflation, as well as labor market dynamics. So lots of moving parts. And as we had spoken about, the only real major exception here in this cluster is, of course, the Bank of Japan that has chosen to do things a bit differently. And to end with our key takeaway from the emerging markets section, well, China's property sector and consumer demand slowdown alongside excess capacity in sectors broadly continues. No massive policies yet to tackle these, but some measures for housing were recently announced. While in India, things are extremely different because of the macro story, as it looks good thanks to inflation, current account and fiscal. The government bond inclusion in JP Morgan's index is also right here. What matters now really for the country will be policy continuity and hopefully a good monsoon season rainfall, because we are probably the only country in the world that really has a monsoon season. I really hope that captures the essence of our conversation today. Shrijit, did I do you proud?
Absolutely. You're spot on with the summary.
Okay, fantastic. I hope all of you listening found value in today's podcast on both the global and domestic economy in the last month, the key themes in play and the outlook. I hope it informs your, investor journeys, your economic journeys in whatever way that is useful. We'll be back with another episode of Let's Talk Macro. Until then, stay safe and stay happy.
Mutual fund investments are subject to market risks. Read all scheme-related documents carefully.